Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. YouTubers, hi. Thank you for embracing, you know, your role. Still trying to figure it out. Don't worry about it. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias! How about that Succession finale? Like, can you believe
the decisions that were made? I'm not doing this with you. I am not allowing.
How?
I'm not allowing you to do this. I am not allowing you to do this. For the new Dunker / YouTube watchers, Steve's bit, you know, a very hilarious bit, is that he just does not watch any of the shows that I suggest that he watches. And then he gives his summaries and thoughts without watching said show. It's no.
Can you absolutely believe? Not. Can you believe that went through?
Anyway, we have some fun planned for you on this episode. Obviously, we are here. The NBA Finals are here. The Denver Nuggets finally have an opponent. They will be facing off against the Miami Heat after a big Game 7 victory. First, we're going to get into some news on the NBA front. We're then going to get into some WNBA thoughts from the weekend. And then we are digging our teeth into this final series, asking some questions, talking through some things. Very excited for this one. We'll start on the news front. Two head coaches being hired. The Milwaukee Bucks getting Adrian Griffin. The Sixers hiring Nick Nurse. I guess which coaching hire, did any of them surprise you? What were your initial thoughts when those tidbits of news came through over the weekend?
Surprise is probably strong. I think for me, in this coaching journey, I've been trying to figure out the math on who's going to get these spots. Because of how many opened up, especially when we're talking about championship contenders, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Phoenix popping open, and just, you know, are these quick responses to windows, trying to keep them open, all that good stuff. Both of them kind of had me in a headlock for different reasons. With Adrian Griffin, that one I had to let marinate for a little bit. Just because process-wise, when you look at what Budenholzer had done with this team in Milwaukee, it's clear they still have a window. They still have Giannis, so they want to capitalize on that. But it felt like they wanted a new voice. And there's a lot of different ways they could have gone. But when you look at the finalists, Nurse had the championship pedigree, right? Atkinson had the offense. Griffin was kind of the unknown, but former player. Really grinded his way through the coaching ranks. I mean, this to me, this path in this day and age is rare. Like I have not worked in the league in about 7 seasons now. That's right. Put it in the comments. Hashtag bum.
Oh, brother.
Adrian Griffin was interviewing for head coaching jobs back in 2014. The rare path. So I'm wondering how much of this was just a buy-in type of hire. Like a reconnect the dots. Like, hey, does Giannis want this person to be the coach? Can he rally the troops and get the buy-in there? Is that what Milwaukee needs to get back to that level? So that's where I was at with that. Where were you with the Griffin hire?
It was, I guess, a little bit surprising because I figured if you're moving on from Coach Budenholzer, like, obviously you want a new voice in there. But beyond that, I think they would be looking for, okay, how can we diversify the offense? Plus, okay, what are the, like, adjustment buttons that we felt haven't been pressed that may be pressed with this next candidate? And so when I saw Nick Nurse, I'm like, okay, well, if nothing else, and, you know, we've talked about this throughout the pod history about how I felt about, like, Toronto's offense in the half court or whatever. But, like, okay, at the very least, we know Nick Nurse is going to do a whole bunch of different things. And to your point, like, he has the championship pedigree as well. And then you throw Kenny Atkinson in there, and it's like, well, I know he's going to do some very good offense things. And if you are trying to hit on some of the younger pieces on the roster, not very many from Milwaukee, but it helps to have Kenny in there as well. If you could try to, you know, again, adjust the offense for the stars that you already have and then try to build up some younger talent as well. Try to extend the window with Giannis because they have a very interesting offseason coming up in terms of their roster and their free agents. Like, okay, that makes sense. And so with, I figured if Adrian Griffin gets a job, I didn't think it would be the Milwaukee one, because I put it like that. I figured, heck, he's been the assistant in Toronto for a while. Like, maybe you just go with that. They have the younger core there and you just kind of grow with that. So that's where I'm just like, huh, it's interesting that it landed with Milwaukee. And then also just the timing of the reports, Nick Nurse pulled out. Then, hey, 3 minutes later, Adrian Griffin has the job. And then wait, Nick Nurse has a job. So like all of that was just like funny to try to connect those dots. But I guess that's kind of where my surprise slash intrigue lied. On the Nick Nurse front, beyond the doc to a nurse jokes, which A plus everyone claps all around.
No, boo. Y'all were not hooping it up with that. The Sixers went from a doc to a nurse.
They did.
Tomato.
Okay. But, how do you feel about the fit with Nick Nurse in Philadelphia?
That one also had me in shambles. Because to me, with all these coaching changes, and I don't know if this ties into Griffin as well, there's this weird subplot. You have teams getting rid of a coach for a particular reason. And you end up hiring a coach who could have gotten let go for similar reasons. And I don't know what to do with that. So for me, it's like, I don't want to underestimate the value of a fresh start for both a coach and a team. Like, we don't know what happened in Toronto. We don't really know what happened in Philly. Whatever happened, it's clear both teams had hit whatever ceiling they were going to hit with those coaches. How much of that was Nick Nurse going backwards? How much of that was that Toronto core had reached its maximum? How much does a new scenario reinvigorate him, reinvigorate the Sixers players? I don't know the answers to that question. I know this man's won 48 or more in, what, 3 out of 5 years. He only had 1 year below 500, has a ring. We've seen the work he can do with a star like Kawhi. He could be very good for Maxey. He could add some more movement to their offense. He could improve their defense, their buy-in, but that's a very weird thing to say out loud after the season Toronto had.
That it is.
So that's where I'm like, is it just as simple as Nick Nurse getting out of the land of 19 wings? And oh, I have Joel Embiid. I can build all this around Joel Embiid. And also Tyrese Maxey. And
yeah, that's, yeah. Question mark. Tobias Harris. We know he'll be there. We shall see.
The wording was very interesting in that little article. Yeah. He sold them on the vision centered around Joel Embiid. It's a part of an organization working to keep James Harden. I was like,
that didn't sound as firm as you would like. Accurate wording, but also, what does that mean? I think the Nurse thing, like, one, Nick Nurse plus Philadelphia media is just going to be hilarious. I think that's going to be funny. That feels very hand-in-glove fit in terms of, like, the level of snark and sarcasm. I want to see what this looks like. If the Sixers have, like, a we've lost four of our last six stretch, what does that mean? I kind of like the personality fit with Nick Nurse and Joel Embiid. Now they're on the same side. I think that can be fun. I oddly feel better about what Nurse does with the offense versus the defense. And that may be something that I just end up taking an L on when we see what the roster is and stuff like that. But like, to your point, Toronto, a lot of talent on the roster. We knew what they were going for in terms of just the very big switchy personnel and stuff. That does kind of hamstring you a little bit offensively based on who they had. And so now that you have speedy pull-up guard that can also drive, and ideally you also have James Harden and you have Joel Embiid, at the very least you have a two-man game that can't be switched ideally. And I do think we saw elements like in the first year with Toronto. Now, granted, Kawhi was there. But you saw when they had different offensive pieces, like Nick Nurse can scheme up some stuff, can draw some stuff, can factor in some movement. So I do think there is room for some more optimization with Philadelphia offensively, and they were a really good offense this season. The defense is where I'm like, what is this roster going to look like? We know Nick Nurse is willing to do just about anything defensively. How much can the current personnel do defensively scheme-wise? How many of those buttons are accessible to Nick Nurse right now? And that's where I'm like, okay, I need to see what this offseason looks like. And that's where we have this conversation in May. It may be different once we get into like season previews in like September, October. But that's where my mind kind of goes with what they have right now.
That's a good point. Mainly because you can't really tap the switch button as heavily as you did in Toronto. I just, the coaching thing has got me, it's in a, I'm in a weird place.
Yeah.
Like it's, you have to really, like, normally when there's a coaching hire, I can kind of process and see, okay, this is what the team is going for. This is why the coach may have wanted that job. Like, I mean, if I'm Nick Nurse and my Toronto run is over and I could potentially either go with Giannis, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker, or Joel Embiid, I probably feel pretty good about it. But you never know what direction they're going to go. And, like, I don't know, okay, I know what this coach can do. I know what this team is struggling with. Is this an upgrade in this department? Like, I get stuck there. Are the concerns the same? Are we shuffling the deck? Like, I don't know. We'll see.
We will see, indeed. I guess non-coaching front, but on the news portion, I think we're supposed to get like a Bob Myers like press conference either today or tomorrow. Do we have any wagers on what that's going to be like? Is he back in Golden State? Is he actually? I'm good. I'm taking that chestnut, this new venture. I don't know. So I guess we'll just keep an eye on that one and see what happens there. But Golden State has they also have an interesting offseason ahead of them. For a multitude of reasons, so we will keep an eye on it. On the W front, I am back home after a basketball-fueled weekend in Las Vegas. Was there on Saturday for the ring night, the ring ceremony for the Aces, and they got the sparks out of there, or what was left of the sparks out of there, because like some kind of flu bug or something has just hit the Sparks locker room. They were missing players on Thursday. They were missing more players on Saturday, so you don't get the full like picture of what the Sparks are in that game, but the Aces, the best defensive effort of the season so far for them in that game. They get the Lynx on the second night of a back-to-back that Sunday. Got a little testy in the third quarter, but ultimately another double-digit win. I just find myself impressed with the Aces kind of sorting through stuff right now, which sounds dull right now, considering the win differentials that they've had. But I felt like the last three games have been an interesting test for them as they're trying to incorporate new pieces offensively and kind of build on what they were last year. It was nice for me to see, okay, you got the Sparks. They got a big at the level. Here's aggressive help against Asia. Y'all deal with it. And like their first Sparks game felt like the first time teams were like, okay, we know that's Candace Parker. If she's spaced, we don't care. We want to muck up this stuff in here. And so it was interesting to see how the Aces sorted through that. And then you get the Lynx game. I looked it up before the game, like via Synergy, the Aces had faced two zone possessions through their first three games of the season. And then you get the Lynx, who just start games in zone and will sprinkle out a bunch. So I wanted to see like how they worked through that. I was able to ask Becky Hammond, like, hey, how do you feel about how your offense kind of processed things? So it was just cool to be in the building, watching them sort through stuff on the court. And then also just the atmosphere on Saturday was tremendous, man. Like the players were amped. De'Erica Hamby, she was the first player to receive her ring. And the crowd was tremendous towards her, and I'm glad that she was able to have that moment. Anita Baker singing the anthem a cappella and killing it and tossing runs. And I was like, hey, dog, this is pretty fire. This is fire. Like, shout out. That this is tremendous work. Coi Leray for the halftime show. The kids in the crowd were loving every bit of that.
Hey, you was dancing, right?
No, but she did a very good job. Why am I getting hit with a side? But I guess zooming out with the Aces so far, they are really freaking good. They are cycling through things defensively, which I think is going to be very important for them. Like even in that Sparks game, watching them lean into more of, okay, we'll put Asia at the level, or we'll just hedge this or blitz this. We got Candace behind her. Or when they're going with, you know, sub one of the bigs out and Kia Stokes comes in. Okay, that's fine. We got Kia behind us. Or Kia's at the level. She's got Asia or Candace behind her. That's been fun. I can't say enough about Jackie Young's start right now. She's been tremendous offensively. The level of decisiveness that we've seen from her to kick off the year. It's not super dissimilar to what we saw at the beginning last year, but it does feel like it's more impactful. It feels like she's even more comfortable finding her spots, finding her seams, getting downhill. You can't duck under against her anymore. Like, I felt like that tide was starting to turn last year, and then it just perked back up in the postseason because you have to do something against the Aces in a playoff setting. But I do think we're just genuinely reaching the point, like, okay, she's just not an under. Like, you have to fight over and do your best and hope your help is keyed in. She's too good with pull-ups now, both beyond the arc and inside of it. So Asia finding her rhythm. Was able to ask her about how she's being doubled. It feels like teams are trying to key in on, okay, let's wait until she gets into her move to kind of swarm her and be physical with her and see if we can bother her, see what the passing reach is like from there. So that's been interesting to kind of track. But overall, the Aces are, they are doing the thing. And it hasn't felt like Candace has popped yet, which is terrifying.
Look, man, the Aces are unfair. I'm just going to go out here and say it right now. Like, they were a machine and got better. And while adding to their roster to get better, their players they already had got better as well. What do you do with that? They play with more flow and tempo and pace. Some of the casual nature of these baskets that they have. But how do you score a basket? And here's Jackie Young hitting a three before the camera can even get back to action. You bring the ball up. You look in the post. Let's swing it. Let's swing it at Chelsea Gray. Oh, Chelsea Gray just made a three. Oh, actually, you know what? Let's just dump it right into Asia. Asia goes to work, no double. What do you do with that? Hey, let's play more defense.
Yeah.
Hey, here's Chelsea Gray, averaging 8 assists a game, shooting 55 from the field, 53% from three.
And it hasn't felt like she's, like, put her stamp on things yet. Nope. Outside of she is just juicing the transition attack with these long balls. But, yeah, it hadn't felt like a Chelsea Gray stamp yet. And nope. She's been very good still.
Jackie Young's been insane. Hey, Kelsey Plum, nice season you had last year. Here's more space for you to drive. Have fun with that.
The drives are hitting. The drives are hitting.
Go put your head down and get a layup.
I want to see if I can pull the updated numbers up very quickly, but I remember looking it up during the Lynx game, during halftime of the Lynx game. We talked about the Aces rim pressure last year. I think they were 11th in rim rate last year. The Storm were 12th, which was hilarious considering who they had. They were 6th heading into Sunday's game against the Lynx. And a lot of that is, one, they're just getting a bunch of buckets at the rim in transition or after made baskets because they're just flying. But to your point, Kelsey Plum just has more room to attack with now. And she's continuing to put her head down. Like, that was something that popped during the finals. While the jumper wasn't falling, she was still getting downhill, get to the free throw line. So, yeah, it's wild to say that this team can get better, but, like, they genuinely can get better. They haven't had Raquana Williams yet to help juice the bench. And I think she's close. I would assume she's making her debut at some point this week, at least based on our brief conversation on Sunday. She seems very close. This is going to get better. So I'm excited to see what this, I think it's a 4-game road trip for the Aces that starts on Friday against the Atlanta Dream, which that's going to be a fun test for them. But we'll see what the Aces look like. Also, just a very quick shout out to the Indiana Fever breaking their losing streak. Aaliyah Boston is so good. Also, Nalissa Smith is such a bucket, which is very reductive analysis. But she already in year two, and we saw elements of this in year one as well, but she is a walking mismatch on the floor. She is simply she's too powerful for smaller forwards to defend her. She's too quick for bigger forwards to defend her. The three-point shooting popped in a way that I didn't anticipate based on what she did in college. The driving ability, and a shout out to friend of the program, Mark Schindler. Also, happy birthday, Mark Schindler. But he wrote a piece about the Fever's win. He highlighted like the empty corner pick and rolls that the Indiana Fever were spamming the Dream with. And there just wasn't an answer. She screens. The screening has gotten better. Something else that Marcus talked about. But screen's gotten better. She pops. You leave her open. That is a jumper that she's comfortable taking. You close out to her. She is comfortable shooting over you anyway. You close out to her late. She can pump. She can drive. Pull up jumper. Push shot. Get all the way to the rim. Get to the free throw line. You can see once the Fever are able to kind of sort out what they want their backcourt to be, if they're able to just get the spacing right, stuff like that, you can see the Nalissa Smith Aaliyah Boston front court is going to be very annoying for teams to deal with.
I'm going to say it, Nikias.
Okay.
I'm going to say it one time.
All right.
The Indiana Fever are on their way.
Ah, some praise for the Indiana Fever from Steve Jones. How about that?
I said I was going to say it once. Yeah, I think the combination, you can kind of see what's going on and what they're putting together. Like, I think Shane Parker worked really hard against Aaliyah Boston that game against Atlanta, but you had those flashes where it's like, oh, I see what she can do against single coverage. This is going to be nasty. The pick and pop with Nalissa Smith was really good. We know what Mitchell could do scoring-wise. I like their bench depth. I like what Christy Wallace brings to the table. I like being able to just throw Queen Egbo in there.
Queen is so, she's so good. Continue. I'm sorry.
Very good. No, you're good. Grace Berger coming in, giving minutes. I'm here to do my job well. Pick and roll. Where do you need it? Cool.
Entry like, pass, cut through space. We good.
But I like the structure. I like the flow. I think they're on the rise. So I'm with you on the fever.
Okay. Anything pop for you over the weekend?
Come on. We got to talk about the Liberty.
Ah, yes. I will clear the floor for you.
Slower burn for the Liberty, but an important win over the Connecticut Sun. Take a nice little punch. I think the potential on both sides is starting to show a little bit. You want to know what stands out to me, Nikias?
What stands out to you, Steve?
Three games. Liberty have given up 80 points, 73 points, 65 points. Important because they gave up 82 a game last year. Hey, if the defense is going to come along at this rate, we know what the offense could do potentially, but the defense is going to be there. It's going to be fun. And I think the fun part about the Liberty is watching them try and figure it out on the fly. Mm-hmm. And this is without really feeling Jonquel Jones yet, which I'm interested to see how they integrate her and how they fix the rotation. But you can kind of start to see, oh, the pieces are coming together. Mm-hmm. Like there is a balance between them showing the high potential they have because of the talent, but also, oh yeah, they have to figure stuff out. But when they hit the blend of movement and tempo, it's tough. Like when they hit the right notes, it's tough. Connecticut was like, hey, we want to switch, Stewie. We did that against Lenny Deladon. We're going to do it against you. And then you had a quick reminder. Oh, yeah. The kick out to the double and the second pass is Sabrina Ionescu attacking a rotating defense. That's a little different. Yeah. But I think the Liberty have done a good job of just building the boat around movement and sprinkling in the talent around it. You know, a lot of UCLA cuts, a lot of Courtney Vandersloot setting off-ball screens. You got to defend a cut. Now it's a back screen for Jonquel Jones. Now it's a handoff to Courtney Vandersloot. It's like, that's not how this is supposed to work. That's a lot of pressure for a defense. But there were possessions where the Sun hit every note they could defensively. Switched, kicked matchups out, recovered. It's like, oh, yeah, that's Stewie late in the clock. Oh, that's a Courtney Vandersloot pick and roll. Oh, that's just Jonquel Jones in the post. It's like, ha, what do you do with that? Have you enjoyed the Liberty so far this season?
I have enjoyed the progression for the Liberty, even to the Liberty Sun game. Like, I'm glad you brought the defense. Because what they did in the third quarter was a lot of fun. It just felt like the light bulb went off, and like, I hate that it was a foul trouble game for Jonquel, because she was part of the early portion of the third. But it was fun watching them kind of figure out, like, oh, right. Breonna Stewart's an all-world defender. Jonquel Jones is also very good when she's locked in. How about we could throw in the switching as well, but how about we just pressure this? How about we just get Breonna Stewart and her insane wingspan? How about we just get her to just start hedging out and getting out of there? Let's get Jonquel up to the level to hedge out. If you're able to pass around this some kind of way, have fun with Jonquel or Breonna Stewart at the rim. I was like, that's interesting for them to tap into. Also on the defense front, Kayla Thornton was everywhere in that second half and specifically that third quarter. I will also say just keeping an eye on it as, you know, Benai Jelani also just tries to find her way with this new group. Kayla Thornton looks more comfortable right now. We'll see if that holds. But Kayla Thornton looks more comfortable right now. So I think that's something worth keeping an eye on. Ultimately, that's a good problem to have if you're the Liberty. Like, oh, no, we have another versatile wing that can fill gaps and defend multiple multiple types of players. What do we do? Who do we play? You can just play both. Like, I've been intrigued with the lineups with both of them on the floor. And you have Sabrina or Courtney Vandersloot is like your lone guard. And then you have that front court. There are some size lineups that the Liberty could throw out there that I'm intrigued with. And I think they're going to start hitting those soon as they gain more chemistry there. The screening point, like, oh, also just on the Sun Liberty front. Best game of the season so far for Courtney Vandersloot. She was in full director mode in that game. Cool, we'll go empty corner. Cool, we'll go some tempo here. I'm going to probe. Let me find this matchup. Like early in the third quarter, because you were talking about the Sun switching possession that popped for me. This is an early high pick and roll with her and Sabrina. I mean, her and Breonna Stewart switched it. Stewie starts to seal. As she's getting her seal, Courtney is dumping the ball in her. Like, nope, y'all aren't doing the kickout thing anymore. Y'all are going to have to deal with this. And I'm just like, ah, that's the level of decisiveness and tempo that you can't allow the Liberty to get to. And if they start tapping into this, it's going to get nasty. And so it was just fun for them, one, to work through that, but two, to do that against a team like Connecticut that has played very well to start the season. So that has been cool. Any Sky thoughts for you? Because I was intrigued by the two-game straight for me.
I have Sky thoughts. One, 2 through 6 is my favorite in the W right now.
Mm-hmm.
I call it the in between. All these teams are doing very fun things, but I don't know who's going to grab the 2 and 3 spots. Like, the Mystics beat the Liberty, and then Connecticut beat the Mystics twice, and then the Liberty beat the Sun, and then the Sky are here to make noise, and then they lost to the Mystics. And then, oh yeah, the Wings are here to make noise, but then they lost to the Sky. So it's like, I don't know. With the Sky, I think, again, they're hitting the notes they need to. The defense is holding up. They have enough high-end talent scoring-wise to figure it out. I think the personnel is surprised and popped. I think the work from their bigs has been great as far as being able to sprinkle things in and score and pop and execute defensively. I just like the vision of what they're doing. Now, I still wonder if they can sustain it. But if these are the contributions you're going to get on a night-to-night basis, I like it. If you're telling me that Smith and Birch are going to have that kind of impact, I'm in.
I'm with you. Like, I've enjoyed them conceptually. Like, they almost won that game against the Mystics, which is just a very weird game. Like, I just felt odd about both teams' offenses. And it's like, oh, well, I guess this is a close game. And then I'm complaining about, like, Mystics process stuff offensively. It's like, oh, they've extended the lead to 12. Okay, cool. And then the Sky is going this huge run. It's like, ah, well, this is why I've been complaining about the process here. This is odd. And then Elena Del Dunn says, I don't care about any of that. Here's a dub. But, like, I like what they're doing, especially defensively. Marina Mabry, looking pretty solid as she's getting integrated and gaining some chemistry.
Huh. I guess we're both trading here. We're trading things here. We're trading takes. You love to see it.
Looking pretty interesting. Like, beginning of the Sky Wings game, and you're seeing you're seeing Marina and Kalia Copper used together. Kalia Copper screening for her and getting these stuff. I'm like, huh. If you can use these two together, that can help raise the offensive ceiling a little bit. I'm intrigued. I've also liked what we've seen from the bigs. My issue is that I don't know how much we're going to see of the bigs because everyone's getting hurt. I don't like it. And I guess that's also part of the issue with Chicago. Like, they naturally don't have a lot of leeway. Like, they have a very specific path to win. And the defense is going to be the foundation for a bunch of it. And if their defenders get hurt, Morgan Burch currently out, Rebecca Gardner currently out, I wonder, like, how many of those they can sustain before it just becomes problematic. They just don't have the bodies. Which, that's kind of like a league-wide issue just in terms of roster spots, and that's a whole deeper conversation we can have. But with the Sky in particular, like, they don't have a huge margin for error. So, like, if they stay healthy, I like what they're doing conceptually. I do think they'll be able to grind out some wins. I just want them to stay healthy. I want them to be able to sustain it. Like, they still do have some stuff to solve offensively. But it's been some fun stuff. Any closing thoughts before we dig into this finals?
I wanted to give a quick salute to the Wings. Well, Arike is doing every night in, night out. Satu Sabali is done. Natasha Howard chipping in. I like it a lot. Now, here's the wild part, right?
Okay.
Short, very small sample size. But the Wings average 89 points a game. Second in the W. The Wings give up 87.7 points a game, which is worse than everyone not playing in Seattle.
Ah, well.
And so I have enjoyed what I've seen, but I'm also like, hey, y'all was talking a lot about defense. And this is a whole lot of starters. It's a long season. Let's see the depth happens. Where are you at with the Wings?
Still in the headlock. Not even a headlock, but it's like the intrigue continues to grow. Like, shout out to Arike, who is currently leading the W in scoring right now. Very quietly, some fun Crystal Dangerfield minutes. So I do want to give the love there as well. With Tierra McCallum still being out, I think she's listed as questionable for the Wings next game. So maybe if she doesn't return for the next one, she's back soon. So we'll see how that kind of reconfigures what the Wings are doing. But like, Natasha Howard at the 5 very much intrigues me. Because, like, I had some questions about, okay, I understand conceptually, defensively, if you have Tierra McCowan and Natasha Howard out there together, you can do a little bit more with Tierra defensively and have Natasha Howard clean up. And to this point, I think Natasha Howard's leading the W in stocks right now, steals plus blocks. She's been everywhere. You put her at the 5, like, the spacing stuff doesn't matter as much. And that opens up the usage, that opens her up with some pick and roll stuff. So that's been fun. I am with you. Like, I do want to see the defense kind of reel in. But yeah, intrigue continues to grow with the Wings. Steve, let's talk about the NBA Finals.
Let's do it. I know you're excited. I know you're hyped. Come on.
Listen. Eric Spoelstra, Michael Malone, what Jokic has done this postseason, what Jimmy Butler's done this postseason. Like, Jokic and Bam are probably my two favorite bigs in the league. And, well, that matchup I have some thoughts about, and we're definitely going to get into that. But it's just fun to see, like, that's the finals matchup. That's cool. What Jamal Murray's been able to do. The wild stuff we've seen from Gabe Vincent before getting hurt. The wild stuff we've seen from Caleb Martin, who very well could have won the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. This shapes up to be a very fun basketball series. Some fun storylines. He is the eighth seed. The Nuggets finally pushing through after the adversity they face with injuries. It's a lot of fun. I'm amped for this one. Much like other series that we've talked about on this pod when we do previews, you go, all right, cool. Let's see what happened in the regular season. Who was available? It's just like, this is different. Not only is this different, this is also from a long time ago. Cool. It's like, all right, most recent matchup, February 13th. It is May. Great. No Jamal Murray, no Aaron Gordon in that matchup. Neat. Let's go back to December 30th. No Caleb Martin. Okay. Haywood Highsmith is starting. Okay. What does it mean? But I guess I start fundamentally with, one, the series is fun. But as I get into, like, what pops for me, what's going to decide the series, I start with who has the most scheme versatility in this series, which is a common question I've asked throughout this playoff run with Denver. This is the first time I find myself asking it about Miami. It's not necessarily about a willingness. We know Eric Spoelstra can and will do anything. But it's more so, okay, how many things can Miami do effectively, defensively in this series? I feel like the zone is off the table for Miami in this series. Or at the very least, I feel like zone is off the table for Miami when Jokic is in the lineup. I do think we'll see him try to sprinkle it in, like early second quarter, whenever Jokic takes a break, and maybe you can disrupt the Jamal Murray-led second units. But as a big piece of the series, I would be very surprised, and this will be something I take an L on if necessary, I would be surprised if Miami can go zone with any kind of frequency in this series. Jokic is too good. Not only is he too good, he can be used in too many ways. He can be moved around too much. Like going through some of the zone clips for Denver or, you know, facing Miami zone. And it's, all right, cool. Jokic starts in the dunker spot, flash to the free throw line. They get it to him. He dices you apart. Okay, Jokic brings the ball up, enters it in, goes to the elbow, gets a touch. He dices you up. Oh, cool. Timeout break, sideline out of bounds for Denver. Jokic just post up on the wing. And gets a smaller player, gets the ball, he dices you up. And it's like, well, I don't know what you could do with that. It's very difficult. And like, even beyond the zone, it just kind of flows into how do they want to approach Jokic, period? Who is Miami starting? Do they stick with Caleb Martin? Do they bring Kevin Love back in there just to have more size out there? And do you do the, hey, Kevin Love, take the lumps. We know you're not going to do well, but at least tire him out so we can conserve Bam a little bit. Use Bam as a roamer. Let's see what we can do. Muck things up on the backside. Do you just play your best five because Caleb Martin has been very freaking good in this postseason run? What does that do? Is Bam in a drop? How often can Miami switch? Because, I mean, big difference between, I think, Denver and Boston in this sense, if you're going to try to switch and then try to scram guys out. The processing speed for Denver is just so much faster than it is for Boston offensively. There's nothing to say about the actual individual talent, but Jokic makes very quick decisions. Jamal Murray can make quick decisions. Aaron Gordon can make quick decisions. Now, they may not always be the right decision, but Aaron Gordon can make quick decisions. KCP can make quick decisions. So, like, it's how often can Miami tap the switching button? I just wonder, like, how many things they can cycle through defensively. I think that's where I start. And naturally with Denver, we've been wondering, like, okay, is this a series Denver can play drop-in? Cool. Like, we asked that, or at least I asked that in the Phoenix series, and they were able to sprinkle it in against Chris Paul and some of the other role guys, and ultimately didn't end up mattering. The Lakers series was a series they could play drop-in, and the Lakers found some stuff, especially when they were trying to empty the corner out, but ultimately they couldn't tap that button enough to move them. Is this a series where Miami can move them? Like, they don't have the big-name pull-up specialist, but Gabe Vincent, very comfortable. We know Kyle Lowry can do it. Chris Haynes sent the tweet very shortly after Game 7. Tyler Hero targeting the Game 3 return. we know how important he can be against drop coverage. And biggest thing for me, that flows into the Jimmy Bam pick and roll. They saw a drop against Boston early on that turned into late switches. New York, we saw some of the late switches. Can Denver late switch against the Jimmy Bam pick and roll? If they can't, does that give Miami another avenue to score? Because I do think this feels like the most unique blend of style-wise offensively that Denver is going to see in this postseason run. I want to see how they deal with that and how many ways they can deal with that. I've talked a lot, but that's kind of where my mind
is. No, this man is amped. He said he's excited.
I am excited
to be here. Let's, you know, Heat Nuggets. Let's eat.
Okay. Ain't no way.
To your original point, it ties into me. Like, Bam Jokic is one of my favorite matchups to watch. I know a narrative is about to get painted. I understand it's coming. I'll tell you why real quick. Bam's got the blend of activity to fight him on the perimeter, to battle in the post, work to fight for position. Jokic has all the size and the power in the world to get to his spot and go right to work when he gets it. And he's a counterpuncher. So I love watching them battle each other. To your scheme versatility point, for me, it's two things. I think Miami could do a lot of different things against Denver. I don't know if they want to do any of them. So I'll ask you this question. How many people do you think from Miami can guard Nikola Jokic?
I think, like, in terms of who gets the matchup or who can do it well?
Who could just do it? But just...
The amount of people that people? I think we'll see... Yeah, I think the amount of people that we will see on Jokic in some capacity... We'll see if Cody Zeller's back in the rotation in this one. Because he found himself excised towards the end of the series. We saw more Haywood, Highsmith, shout out to him. I think Bam would obviously get a shot. Mm-hmm. I do think we're going to see some Kevin Love. Even if it's not in the starting lineup, I think they'll just cross at some point, and you'll have Kevin Love. And then I guess the point five would be if they try, like, if Haywood's in the rotation instead of Cody's, it'd be one of those two getting it.
And Jimmy, so Cody, Caleb,
maybe some switching, and then let's see if we can front and load up behind it.
This is why I asked the question. Mm-hmm. They could switch Jimmy and Caleb onto Jokic, but what do you do after that? Miami's always been a front team. Do you really want to front Jokic? Because yes, you may be there on the catch. You know what's going to be gone when you arrive? The ball. It's not going to be there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of takes switching out a little bit. Zone, you have to try and sprinkle in. That has to be ATO, we're in the mud, bench lineups. We have to just try and quickly use that to get you out of rhythm. It has to be a piece of what we do, not what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But Miami's fine with that. My concern, back to your Jokic point, your scheme versatility point, the impact of Bam having to guard Jokic and having to be so engaged in that matchup, what does that do to Miami's defense? Denver goes pick and roll. Is Bam going to be in a drop like he was against New York? Sounds great. That's Jamal Murray turning the corner. And that's Jokic rolling or popping. Mm-hmm. So to your, hey, can we put Kevin Love on Jokic point? You could. However, my concern, Kevin Love has done his job all playoffs long. I've said it on this very podcast. This is a little different because, A, that's a whole lot of action. Whole lot of different things they could throw at you. And there's a threat of the pop, which he has not necessarily had to deal with a ton. Mm-hmm. That's no disrespect to Al Horford. It's just a little different. Do you just let Jokic be a scorer if you're Miami?
I get it conceptually. I mean, I guess on a baseline level, there's no good answer against Jokic. Like, you can't double him every time and say, we're going to dare these other guys to beat us, because Jamal Murray can do that. MPJ, who shot 31% from three during the Miami regular season series. Again, it's 2-game small sample, but high volume didn't shoot well. We know MPJ can knock down shots. KCP has had a very impactful postseason. We know he can knock down shots. I don't know if you could do that. And with the let Jokic score thing, I guess my question then just becomes like, against who? So I think if you're leading into, again, just on a very basic level, we want to take away the other stuff, Jokic get yours one-on-one. Yeah, I guess you kind of have to feed Kevin Love that matchup at that point. So I think one, Jokic just he's good enough to win against Bam. And two, if he's doing that against Bam and Bam ends up in foul trouble, now you're forced to go to Kevin Love or forced to go to Cody Zeller or forced to, I guess, dust off Yurt if it gets that dire. That gets problematic.
Your foul trouble point is a very good point. Why I ask, do you want to let Jokic be a scorer? And obviously you don't want to. One, I think the scheme versatility is going to be more, we have things that could throw you out of rhythm. Like, I think the best recipe is, Bam, you be active and fight, and then we're just going to try and shuffle the deck. We're going to try and shuffle the deck. Maybe we'll give you a smaller matchup. Maybe we'll double. Maybe we'll front. Maybe we'll go zone. But maybe we'll just mix all that together and try and not let you get in a rhythm. Like, I don't know which way you go with it.
I'm going to get some Jokic boxing one.
I feel like they're going to just try and throw everything at the wall they can. My second point on why I asked that, do you take whatever money you would spend, hypothetically, defensively on Jokic, and put all that to Jamal Murray and say, you, sir, cannot beat us. Joker, you are great. There's a whole lot of ways they can use you. That movement's going to be tough. But you, Jamal Murray, you can't do it. What do you think of that?
I definitely understand it because he feels like he's been the one that's been putting Denver over, if we want to phrase it that way. We know Jokic is the best player. We know he's had the best postseason run for a Denver player, averaging a triple-double, doing so efficiently. He gets the most attention defensively, we get it. But it also feels like, okay, Jokic is doing this stuff. We may be able to bother him in this very specific way, or maybe he's playing A-minus ball instead of A-plus ball. Oh, snap, here's a 14-point quarter for Jamal Murray. Well, we can't do anything with that, too. So I do understand the concept of we're making sure you can't get going. Because I do think, from like a creation standpoint, it's Jokic, it's Murray, and then there is a drop. And so if you are able to, I don't think you can really take Jamal off the table, but if you can slow him down, I do think that helps you in your overall goal. Like, if Denver's going to have a 125 offensive rating with Jokic and Murray on the floor, if we can get that down to 119, where it still would lead the NBA overall, but it's not that, that gives us a better chance. And I think you have a cleaner path to bothering Murray than you do bothering Jokic.
So in my mind, I'm battling it because I think, to me, Jamal Murray is the person you got to take off the table. You have to try and at least make it tough. It's got to be 12 for 29 or 12 for 32, something like that.
I got you.
You got to try and take him away. How they get there is where I'm trying to work through it. Because if Bam is on Jokic, that takes away some of your switchability. If it's drop, we've seen what Murray could do with the space. Does he get the Jalen Brunson treatment? We're showing help. We're showing bodies. The tricky part with that, does Denver slow down enough for that to be a thing? Yeah. Like, and that's where I feel like Miami has to do the work against Denver's movement, against Denver's cutting. They have to try and get them in the mud that way. And now we can focus in on Murray and Jokic. What you got?
Okay. Can I ask a Steve question really quickly?
What's up?
What's going to be more important, Miami's defense or their offense?
Can I be a given a Kaius answer? Yes. I think it ties together. I'll stick with the defense first, though. Miami has to be ready for that movement and cutting in the regular season. I know it's regular season games. Two games, right, Nikias? First game, Denver scores 124, shoots 59% from the field, 60% from three, 45 made field goals, 34 assists. That can't be Denver's path if you're Miami. The second time they played, 112, shot 57%, 44 made field goals, 34 assists. That can't be the path if you're Miami. You have to take that off of the board. Defense has been a key part of Miami's formula. And to your question, it's been both. Like, they need both. I know that's dumb analysis because duh. But for them specifically, their defense has to hold up enough and their offense has to score enough to allow their defense to stay strong. We've seen enough sequences where, hey, the defense is here, but darn, we ain't scoring.
We still in transition.
This one from 4 to 13 real quick. And this is a Denver team. If you thought Boston made Miami pay, Denver will punish you in transition over and over and over again. But we've seen the stretches where their offense is hitting. They can't get a stop. You can't afford that against Denver. And we saw what happened when the Knicks and the Celtics in the playoffs decided, oh, we can just make quick decisions and play with tempo and movement. Denver does that just naturally. So yeah, if I'm Miami, I got to key in on Jamal Murray. I got to take this movement off the board. I've got to try and slow you down that way. To your offensive point, how does Denver want to defend Miami? I think we're both in unison. I assume we're going to see drop to start. The question is, it ties into a couple things for me. One, how much does this open up Bam Adebayo as a roller? Can he get to the short roll? Can he get to the mid-range? Number two, if that pocket is there, we know Denver's defense, the weak side is going to pull over and rotate. What does that open up for Miami? Can they go empty corner? Can they get shots out of that? Can they generate from there? And then what is Jimmy Butler's comfort level going to be with these matchups? Is he going to be able to cycle through like we saw against Milwaukee, like we saw against Boston? Or is this going to be closer to that Knicks series where, hey, we have belief in these guys being able to defend you. We're going to show help. You got to figure it out. Does Denver throw switching out there if Jimmy and Bam aren't involved? So now, hey, Miami, we're taking your movement off the table. I get very intrigued because you also have to tie in. Okay, cool. Denver's going to be in a drop. We'll concede or help on the roll. We'll concede the pull up. Let's not forget how Miami got here. Hey, Milwaukee, Brooke, sweet drop you got there. Here's a pull up for you. Hey, Al Horford, nice drop you got there. Here's a pull up for you. We've seen it from Gabe Vincent, Martin, Strews, Robinson, Lowry. All of them had moments of making plays against that automatic tight coverage where we know exactly where you're going to be. I either have the shot, I have the pocket pass, or I have the skip. Mm-hmm. How does that play into it? And can Miami generate enough shots and rolls to make Denver blink? Because if Denver blinks, we all know what that means. Two people are going to be on the ball. And if Miami gets two on the ball, now it just becomes, can we make shots?
Yep. And, you know, worth noting, it hasn't been, I guess a lot of this is because of Boston switching, but in terms of like three-point rate, Miami's three-point rate is down from the regular season. That's interesting to track, but just in terms of shot profile, they still take more threes than Denver does. And a big portion of Miami's wins throughout this postseason, not the only portion, as Heat fans will tell you very quickly, it is not just because they're shooting well. And I agree, it's not just because they're shooting well, but the shooting has been a big component. And so to your point, Steve, if Miami's able to get Denver in rotation to that degree, and if they're able to get two on the ball, it can get fun. What my mind went to as I was thinking through like the drop point, I was thinking about how Denver played drop against the Lakers and kind of the dichotomy with LeBron. Like, is he space one pass away? Is he going to cut or whatever? It's understandable that we're talking about Denver's movement and Denver's cutting specifically because that's just what they do. We have to factor in Miami's cutting in this series. Because I think there are going to be some pockets. And with how inconsistent, very quietly, you know, we talked about it in the pod, but very quietly how inconsistent the help was on some of those drop possessions, because it's not just pure drop for Denver. It's drop with, we want to make sure the help is peeled in because they want to insulate Jokic a little bit. Miami's very smart about movement off the ball. And even beyond the cuts, it's just relocations to make you may peel in. Now you got to go a little bit longer because we were above the break. Now we're on the wing now. Or we on the wing, we in the corner now. And they can shift things around. Denver has to be keyed in on the cuts as well. And I do think if they are if they're allocating resources to dealing with the cuts as well, they're going to turn those drop possessions with Jokic into two-on-two affairs. And again, I don't know how often Denver wants to late switch Jokic. It's something that they've sprinkled in throughout the regular season. It's not something that they want to do. And this just feels like the series where we can, if you're Miami, okay, we can really get to the Jimmy Bam pick and roll in this. If it's dropped and we move things around with cutting or spacing the correct way, the middle's going to be open. Jimmy can go either way. Or we can really open up this pocket for Bam. And then that goes into, okay, what does Jokic look like as a shot contester? And we have talked about this throughout the postseason. We talked about it in the Lakers series. If they are able to get to the pocket, it doesn't have to just be a short jumper for Bam. He could very well take a dribble or two and get into Jokic's chest and get some cleaner looks at the rim. Now, this goes back to my Bam question. Like, hey, friend, how many layups are you making in this series? How many of those shots are you making in this series? Because this has to be, and it is, you know, from a scheme perspective, this is set up to be a big Bam scoring series. He's not facing Brook Lopez. He's not facing Mitchell Robinson. He's not facing the Al Horford-Robert Williams combo. And then you think about Jokic in a drop or Jokic at the level. Either one can open up the pop, depending on how Miami moves the help around. This is tailor-made for Bam to have a big offensive series in this one. He's going to have to capitalize on those. The more I think through the series, I feel better about Miami's offense than I do about their defense. But that also means it's a scoring competition with the Denver Nuggets. And they don't stop. That's part of the fun, obviously, and why I'm very excited about this series. But if this turns into who wins 121-116, like, that's going to be not an impossible series for Miami to win, but that's going to be a tough one. But I do think Miami has a lot of avenues to score on this Denver team. And this is naturally a team that takes more threes than Denver as well. So, like, even if Jimmy and Bam aren't at A-plus level, Miami has Caleb's willing to take threes. He's been bombing away. We're waiting for the big Max Strus series or group of games. Like, he can shake loose, and he shot well against Denver during the regular season series. If Tyler Hill comes back and he sees drop, Duncan Robinson has reemerged throughout this postseason. Like, there are going to be avenues for Miami to generate looks, and there's also just a general, we got math if we want to go that route, if all else fails. So I am intrigued with this one. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
I think it's fun to talk about the potential of what Miami could run and what they could open up. Again, folks, the two keys for me, the type of shots that Miami's able to generate when they're able to get to drive and kick, when they're able to create open shots and share the ball and move it, they're very tough to deal with. The key to getting to Denver's defense is A, getting them in rotation, and B, punishing them in rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Driving closeouts, knocking down shots. So that's like a really fun mini battle to me in my head. If Miami can keep that movement up. Actually, real quick, I'll ask you, who do you think is going to have the bigger culture shock? Miami or Denver? Just defensively. I think my head leans Denver just because they have a whole lot that they can present to him. But has Denver faced a team that moves Miami does on the weak side? It's a lot easier to be static when, hey, we're helping off this person, or, hey, y'all ain't moving, which is, what, two and a half out of the three teams they faced, right?
I'd argue within those 2 points, I'd argue it's all three.
Hey.
So, like, they...
You can shoot Phoenix no bill.
No, I'm saying, like, they... Phoenix eventually had to go to, you know what? Sorry, Torrey Craig, you're not playing anymore. Like, we saw Terrence Ross, we saw Morlander, like, they had to shift to that because of how Denver was able to put two on the ball and also help off somebody in the early portion of the series. So, like, I don't mean in a disrespectful manner, but, like, that's what they saw. Like, Minnesota, there were people they were helping off. The Lakers, there were people they were helping off, and then just general tempo stuff. Like, that was part of the Lakers' formula, grind you down, get to the paint. But that's what it was. To your point, like, yeah, this is going to be very different for Denver. And they are rested, but they are also coming off the layoff. So I do wonder, like, am I shocked if Miami's up, like, 28-19 in the first quarter of game one? No. Like, I think I probably still lean more culture shock for Miami. Just because Jokic is such a different singular force. And you think about who Miami has faced in this playoff run, like, it's all someone that you can try to load up against in some capacity. Giannis, when he was there before getting hurt, like, honestly, you want to not necessarily build a wall, but there were wall elements to that, and Bam got that assignment a lot, but still, a lot of wall elements there. We are not letting Jalen Brunson get space if we can help it. That's very much load up. With Boston, like, we are just going to switch a ton, but, like, ultimately, we're going to load up, help if you get a matchup you like. With Denver, you can't really do that. Like, you can do that some with Jamal Murray, but you can't do that with Jokic. So, like, maybe that's where it's like, okay, wow, we really got to be keyed in with our help. We really have to. If we're going to send help, if we're going to double, we got to do it quickly. If we're going to switch, we got to make sure these switches are physical. We can't allow gaps, because if they slip any of this, Jokic will find. Like, it's probably Miami, but Denver has some stuff to work out, too. Quick question for you. Oh, go ahead.
What you got?
No, go ahead. I was going to say, who's, well, actually, I have two questions for you. One, going back to how does Denver want to defend Miami, who are you giving the Jimmy and Bam assignments to? So I think off the top of my head, it's like, all right, cool, just play it static. Like, you go Aaron, like you go either Aaron Gordon or KCP on Jimmy Butler, and then Jokic is on Bam, and you go from there. How much can Denver tap into the cross-matching with their starters?
I think you leave Gordon on Jimmy, Jokic on Bam. I think you're okay with KCP battling Jimmy. I don't necessarily think you want Michael Porter Jr. on Jimmy, but I don't know if you want to say that to start. Mm-hmm. Jamal Murray, I would say stay. You, no.
Yeah. We on the, we're aligned.
No, that's going to be very interesting to see how they attack Jamal Murray, because Miami's not afraid to put anyone in action, especially if they feel weakness. That ties back to the cycling point. Is it going to be Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., who are both in action in Denver now, feels like they have to send help? Does that open something up? Are they going to go back to how they started the Lakers series and saying, actually, Jamal, you switch. Go ahead, switch to start. We'll see what happens. That kind of, or are they going to say, no, Jimmy, we're not letting you get going. We're going to double. Like, those are little tiny things where I'm like, I'm very intrigued. I have a question real quick.
Okay.
Any concern about Nikola Jokic getting in foul trouble?
A little bit. And that kind of, that goes to Bam first and foremost, but also even just going through some of the regular season possessions. If Jimmy turns the corner, like, he is not afraid to go into Jokic's chest. And I don't think these guards are going to be afraid to go into Jokic's chest. And so, like, I do feel like this is a team that can threaten the rim in a multitude of ways. In a way that Denver hasn't really seen yet. You can't have the, this can't be the bad hands of Jokic series. So I do think it's worth keeping an eye on, for sure. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say real quick. Sorry, mine's going a million minutes. I'm very excited for this series. I am a little concerned. I wouldn't say concerned. I have thoughts about Miami offensively.
Okay.
Everything you've laid out is great. And I think they can hit a whole lot of notes offensively. There's also the fact that they maybe, what if they don't have a pressure point they want to hit to start? What if they don't have a button they want to press? And my concern is, for better or worse, make or miss, Miami's offense is really good when it's decisive. Mm-hmm. When they make quick decisions. Whatever it is they're doing, get into it and go. Here, Jimmy, post up. Bam, switch, post up. Whatever they do, when they do it, it's great. When they have those possessions where Bam catches it and they go delay and there's no cuts open, and then Bam looks to the other side and no one's open, and he looks to the other side again and no one's open, and then, hey, Jimmy, here's the ball. And Jimmy's like, nah, here, Kyle Lowry, here's the ball. And it's like, wait.
2 on the clock.
Wait. That's going to play into Denver's defense big time. And that's where I'm like, okay, where does Miami, what button do they want to press to start? Like, I think Milwaukee series, on point. Jimmy Butler was like, I want everything. Cool. Knicks series, took a little bit, but they figured out, oh, yeah, y'all are helping a lot. We can play out of that. Can they, is it going to be like a Knicks game one where we got to kind of feel this out? I'm intrigued by that.
I think that's fair. Like, I think tempo is going to be very important for Miami. It's going to be important for both of these teams, but it is going to be important for Miami, because we saw, once Boston started showing a little bit more help on the Jimmy stuff or on the Bam stuff and bothering Bam on the catch, I'm like, okay. You know, we saw it in like game four onward when Robert Williams, for me at least, he was popping on the switches. I'm like, oh, these aren't automatics. These aren't pockets anymore. These are, no, I'm still here. Do something. And now it's Jimmy Butler throwing in like 12 pump fakes like the Dwayne Wade give. It's Bam Adebayo looking left to right. And it's like, ah, well, this ain't great. You can't get here. And to your earlier point, if you're allowing Denver to get out in transition, just get back on the bus. Like, we don't have much to talk about if Denver's, if 18% of Denver's possessions are in transition. You're not going to have a good time if that's the case. So I do think that's worth talking about. Just going back very briefly to the lineup point, I just wonder, like, how much Aaron Gordon do we see on Bam? And that kind of goes back to, like, how much does Denver even prioritize taking away the Jimmy Bam two-man game in this series? Because if they feel like they need to do that, then I think Aaron Gordon on Bam makes more sense than Aaron Gordon on Jimmy, and you just trust KCP to fight. But again, my question then becomes like, okay, where are you putting Jokic? I think if Kevin Love does start for size purposes, I think you can go to that gambit a little easier for Denver. Like, okay, we'll put you on Kevin Love. Kevin Love can shoot and he can be used as a hub, but like ultimately, it's not like Jokic type usage with Kevin Love. So I think you can afford to use Jokic in that way. If it's Caleb Martin, I've seen enough in this postseason. I just don't think you can do it. I don't think you put Jokic on Caleb Martin and say, hey, just stay apart. Caleb Martin moves around too much. He shot too well. He drives too hard. That ties into your foul trouble question. I don't think you can do it. So that's going to be a very interesting dynamic for Miami to kind of sort through. Who are your X factors in this series, Steve?
Well, I'm going to go with Kyle Lowry for the Miami.
Okay.
They need as many pull-ups from that man as they can get. And I think he's got enough defense where if he's scoring and can kind of close or come close to like close adjacent, I think that helps Miami. I mean, obviously I could just group all of Miami's folks into one pot and just be like, all these guys have to stay aggressive and make shots, which is true. But I think Lowry probably makes the biggest like difference for me in this one. Secondarily, I'd probably go Robinson and Strus.
Okay.
Mainly because can they make enough shots to where even if it's not pick and roll, if there's down screens, do they get two on the ball there?
Mm-hmm.
Like someone has to step up and make Denver come up to the level. And then for the Nuggets, it's Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Shooting's too important. Defense too important. Big shot's too important. I think he's going to be asked to have some Jimmy matchups, but also let me bother some of these guards that have been losing their mind. Let me navigate these screens. Let me try and take away some of this. So those are probably my two. Who you got?
For me, it's going to be Gabe Vincent. I do think if Denver is going to play drop, he's going to see it. He's going to have to chew up that space. He's going to have to knock down those shots. He has largely done that this postseason, and that's been a big part of Miami winning these games for what he's been able to do against drop. If Gabe Vincent is able to make Denver, I ain't going to say that he's able to make drop untenable for Denver. If he's able to make Denver think about it, that's a win for Miami. If they start mixing in two on the ball against Gabe versus just giving him drop, I think that's a win for Miami. That just adds a pressure point for them. Like, okay, cool. Jimmy doesn't have to create. Bam doesn't have to create. If you're drawing the two on the ball, now one of those two they're going to be the beneficiary of the defense moving around like this. Gabe has to be able to hold up. And I would imagine if Miami doesn't go with the put length on Jamal Murray thing, then again, I don't know who's starting between Caleb Martin and Kevin Love yet. If they do start Kevin Love, I would imagine Jimmy Butler is going to be like, I don't think they give Jimmy the Jamal matchup early. They could. But I would just assume Gabe Vincent gets the first crack at Jamal Murray in the series. He's going to have to hold up. Like, I think he is the best screen navigator of their guard group that's healthy right now because there's no Victor Oladipo. He's going to have to hold up against Jamal Murray because if Murray's able to boogie on him, that just gets kind of tough. It forces Miami to go to different gambits versus having something they could just kind of sprinkle in to keep Denver off balance. But then on the Denver side, it's Aaron Gordon for me. I do think, depending on his usage, he can be a help point, and Miami's going to have to try to find as many of those as they can if they want to try to bother Jokic at all. He seems to be the obvious one among the starters at the very least. And then you think about the usage. The on-ball screen is going to be important. If Miami does try to mix some stuff up, and again, if they start big, do we immediately go to 5-4 pick and roll or 4-5 pick and roll and get Miami in the tizzy there? if Miami is helping off of him on these Jokic post-ups. Off-ball screening, pin-ins, chilling in the dunker spot, offensive rebounding. The possession battle is going to be very important in this one. I guess I'll throw that out there. It's duh analysis. Teams want to take care of the ball. But for how important transition offense is going to be in this series for both teams, you want to make sure that you're not giving up live ball turnovers. And for what this half-court battle may be, you don't want Denver getting a bunch of extra chances and vice versa. So Aaron Gordon is going to be very important for me. If he does get the Jimmy Butler matchup, I keep going back to the late switch point. I don't think they do it with Jokic involved. The screen navigation for Aaron Gordon is going to matter more than it has in this postseason.
You know what? Let's stick here. Before okay. you go to the predictions, Boston fans, you get the day off. You get the day off. Your point, one, what if the bid is just whoever turns the ball over the most just loses? That's just the finals. We did all this talking, and it's just, hey, the Denver turned over 28 times, and now they lost, something like that. To your point about Aaron Gordon, that made me think about the second unit battle to a degree, and I wanted to give you some love, matchup main. Make sure you were good there. Is Miami ready for that, hey, Aaron Gordon, Jeff Green, we switch everything, now what? Does that have an impact to you?
I think it can. I think that's going to be a very important battle. I think the staggering in particular is going to be very important, because when you think about the second unit, it's a lot of Jamal Murray, you're the offense in this one. And you, like, you have Bruce Brown out there too, but ultimately Jamal Murray, you have to think. With the way that Miami is staggered, it might be Jamal plus bench versus Jimmy plus bench. And if Denver is switching, like, how much does that mean against Jimmy? If he's going, you know, going back to your point about Jimmy wanting to cycle through matchups. Hey, man, if forget the mismatch, honey, for a minute. What if Jimmy just gets comfortable against Aaron Gordon? What does that do? Because if he gets comfortable against Aaron Gordon in the starters, that's a problem. Because if you cycle KCP on him, he just has a height, size, strength matchup and opens up some more stuff. But ultimately, with that second unit with Aaron Gordon at the five, if he's blasting Aaron Gordon, who's behind him? Does it become a Jeff Green foul trouble issue? Do you just have to put Christian Brown on Jimmy? And that's going to be a very quiet one to watch, by the way. I do think Christian Brown sees some minutes against Jimmy. And for young defenders in the league, like, I don't think he... And again, this will be something else that I might just take the L on. He doesn't seem to fall for a bunch of pump fakes variety of young wing defender. That's going to be a fun one to track whenever he gets that assignment. But yeah, those second unit minutes are going to have to hit for Denver. The switching can have an impact. But I also think about the way that Miami's able to slip and move around. And they just got a whole bunch of practice against Boston. And I wonder if they just look at it like, oh, wait a minute, this isn't Marcus Smart switching. Oh, hold on. This isn't Robert Williams switching. Does Miami breathe a little bit easier? Saying, hey, these are concepts that we have seen. This ain't Marcus Smart, Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Al Horford. And what does that do? Does that reopen up the driving kicks? Even against the switching? Maybe that should have been like my theme question. Like, hey, who can switch more in the series?
That's a good one. It's a fun series. Actually, before we get to predictions and free throws, I have a free throw adjacent one for you.
Okay.
Who is more important for Miami to get to defensively? Like with their offense? Jokic, Aaron Gordon, or Jamal Murray?
There's a good argument for all three. Yeah, that's a good argument for all three. Because we saw what the Lakers were able to do against Jamal Murray. I guess to quickly answer your question with a question before answering, has a team gotten to Aaron Gordon in this postseason yet?
The closest off the top of my head was just the Lakers saying, dude, you can't do anything on this end.
Yeah, it's not like he's like a 24 per game scorer, so like obviously it's relative, but like uh I do think they're just going to be built-in pockets against Jokic. Either the drop and you have openings, or he's two to the ball and you play out of that. And then Jamal Murray, even if he switches, like Denver's going to send some semblance of help. I think if Miami can actually get to Aaron Gordon defensively, that causes some problems. Because I do think that takes some stuff off the table for them. I think it might be, counterintuitive as it is, it might be Aaron Gordon if they can get to him. Because offensively, it's very much going to depend on, okay, how much are we directly involving him in action in some way? Because they will not guard him if not. I may go Aaron Gordon. That's a really good question.
That's what I do.
It is indeed what you do. Man, I know I keep saying this, but what a fun series we have ahead of us, man.
Very fun. This More is people be, should talk about it.
This is going to be so good hoop. This is going to be so good hoop, which, okay, of course, naturally means first game one's going to be like 93-87. But this is going to be some really good hoop. Trying to think, do I have any last second questions before we get into the actual predictions? I think I'm good. Think I'm good.
Steve. Who do you got?
Ah, okay.
Oh, you want to go to me first?
You can, yeah. That's fine.
Heat in six.
Oh, man. I think the series ends in six. I've full transparency. As I began like prep for this one, I was like, okay, this feels Denver in six. And then I started talking through stuff with Miami. I was like, this might be Miami in six. They have enough avenues. They have Jimmy. I think I go Denver in six. I don't know if Miami has enough to solve the Jokic thing. And that just permeates so much of what Denver does. And I do think as many avenues as Miami has offensively in this series, it still boils down to, okay, can we score more than Denver and do that four more times? And like, even we've seen pockets where Jokic looked uncomfortable. We've seen pockets of Jamal Murray not looking uncomfortable. And then you look at their offensive rating. It's like, oh, they had a down night and it was 118. Oh, this third quarter is nasty. They finished with a 126 offensive rating. I'm going to go Denver in six. But I am very excited for the series. And I think, honestly, this really can't go either way. Like, I've seen, like, Nuggets in four, Nuggets in five. And I understand how you get there because of the Jokic problem and what it feels. That feels too discounty to Miami for me. That feels way too, it's dismissing the avenues that they have, especially offensively. I don't think it gets dire unless someone gets hurt. Which I guess I will say on that front is still worth monitoring Jimmy's ankle. So I will go Denver in. I'll go Denver in seven.
Actually, Denver in seven. Okay,
Denver in seven, and I think we're Denver outlasts them. We're locked in, but holy crap, do we have some fun basketball ahead? I guess we will give like some brief Boston thoughts on the next pod because
y'all got the day off. You got free throws, Nekias?
I do have a few free throws for you. Actually, you may give Boston the day off. I do have a couple of Boston-related questions to kick off the free throw segment. Steve, better ball handler, Bob Cousy or Jaylen Brown?
Oh, Jaylen Brown. But if you have the clip of Cousy doing the Jaylen Brown. I'm going Jaylen Brown. Nope. Sorry, Bob.
Who has a better left hand?
Oh, no.
All right. Fair enough. Second question I had. Last Boston question I think I actually, yeah. Stronger bond, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown or Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa?
Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa.
Okay.
I cannot believe you asked who has the better left hand.
Hey, man. Wilder ending, Heat Celtics game six or Succession?
Heat Celtics game six.
Yeah, this is a trick question because it's the only thing that you've seen. Better start to the season defensively, Ari McDonald or Dana Evans?
Ari McDonald.
Okay. As of recording, Courtney Williams is fifth in the W in assists at 5.3, and Jessica Shepherd is sixth at 5 a game. Which one is more surprising?
Courtney Williams.
Tough. Last question I have for you. Who is the most improved player in the W?
Well, I'm not saying Jackie Young. Don't you say Jackie Young. Don't start with Jackie Young. Jackie Young is great, but she was great last year. Don't do this.
Would you agree that she is greater than she was last year? Do you feel like I asked open-ended? Do you have a candidate that someone's popping for you early? Like, obviously, we got 37 plus more games left in the season. But
I'm not happy with what you just did right there. I want you to know that. I'm not happy with what you just did right there. I can't even think of who my actual most improved was. I've told you who it was like 10 times, and now I can't remember because I'm flustered.
Big Satu fan?
Give it to Lexi Brown.
Okay. Lexi's been fun. Do you have free throws?
I sure do, buddy.
All right.
What do you think PJ Tucker thinks of Caleb Martin's performance?
Well, probably some semblance of I could have done that before, like, introspection. Sorry, go ahead.
Can you have a song named Tyler Hero and then rep the Celtics?
I mean, not a safe space. No, not really. That seems to be counterintuitive.
Okay. Reports say Chris Middleton was with Giannis to meet the finalists for the Bucks coaching job. How many times did Chris Middleton do the Magic Johnson meme?
Probably twice. Also, was Drew not a part of this as well?
Must have been busy. Huh. What's wilder? People being mad that Miami planned to fly to Denver in case they won, or Dwight Howard saying he had a better prime than Nikola Jokic?
Wilder is the former. Road team has flight planned in case they have to start the finals on the road. More at 11. What are we talking about?
I don't understand why that was a story, because if they had lost, then they just would have gone home.
It's just dumb. Like, it was more dumb, but like it took me back to like the consistent poke. Wow, Jimmy smiling on the sideline after this. Like, that's just what he's a cool dude. He laughs at stuff. He's confident in his team, and he says we're going to win. That's literally what he has done since he's been there. It feels like he was just trying to find, like, bulletin board material that wasn't there. Like, it's just... anyway, continue.
This is a special one.
Okay.
This is going right out to you. Who stops to the free throw line with the first do you want to win a championship timeout? Coach Michael Malone or Eric Spoelstra?
Oh, man. I am putting my money on Coach Michael Malone. Mm.
Long layoff?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. 10-2 start. Cuts, transition. Yeah, that's going to be, yep.
What's funnier, no Miami Heat team making the finals without Udonis Haslem, or the fact that Udonis Haslem or DeAndre Jordan will be a champion at the end of this season?
You know what? That's an amazing dunker spot callback. I think the UD one is just cool, because like, he was a big part of the first title, and he had contributions in the earlier, you know, the big three titles. The last two finals appearances, just like, okay. I think the UD DJ combo is funnier, so we'll go with that one.
Okay, perfect. And tougher matchup. It's my final one, Nikas. Tougher matchup, Bam Adebayo versus Nikola Jokic or Kofi Kingston versus Brock Lesnar?
Oh, no. See, this is funny because I had like a Malcolm Brogdon and Cody Rhodes question. Now I was like, you know what? That's not going to be in good taste. I can't do that one. I'm going to go Kofi and Brock. On that one, that's just tough. Because Brock Lesnar is just that's just tough. We'll just say that's just tough. Also, quick news nugget to close it out: Bob Myers has indeed stepped down.
Oh,
as GM of the Golden State Warriors. So,
well,
yeah, interesting offseason ahead for the Golden State Warriors. We'll put it that way. But yeah, I'm glad I caught that one in the notifications before ending the pod, because I would have been in shambles if I did not see that. So there's your news to cap it off. And thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. Join us for the Dunker Spot online watch parties. Description is going to be, the link is going to be in the description, rather. So, should it be hyperlinked, just click on that. It's free, no shenanigans. If not, copy and paste it into your browser. It is free, no shenanigans. We are absolutely watching SmackDown on Friday. Let's just go ahead and put that out there. Because, buddy, shambles after night of chat. Shambles. Shambles. This is cinema. Word to friend of the program, Tyrese Halliburton. Shambles. Anyway, we're going to be watching wrestling. We're going to be watching WNBA basketball. We are going to be watching the NBA Finals tipping off on Thursday night. So come rock with us. We are breaking down clips live. We're just generally opining during the game. So come have some fun with us if you haven't already. Naturally, if you're watching this on YouTube, subscribe to JJ Redick's YouTube channel. We are on here at least once a week. So do that. Also, just check out JJ's stuff. It's really good. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
I'm doing what you should have done a long time ago.